Faye, it's that time of year again. This episode's coming out right after match day, so congratulations to all of you who just matched into the best specialty ever.
Yes, congratulations to all of you who are matched into OBGYN, and we know that sometimes, even after the match, we may be a little bit anxious about starting intern year.
Yes, so for the last several years, Faye, myself, as well as a team of really excellent individuals have come up with the hashtag OBGYN Intern Challenge residency preparatory curriculum delivered via text message once a day for a month leading up to intern year.
Yes, so if you want to get signed up for the OBGYN Intern Challenge, go to www.obgyninternchallenge.com where you can go ahead and sign up, do our survey, and this will get you set up for our text message course later on in the year.
We'll see you for the curriculum. Faye, it feels really nice to be back and recording podcasts again after parental leave, but you know, even 6 weeks later, I feel like I have missed a whole world of things in OBGYN.
Yeah, me too, especially 9 weeks out. But thankfully for us, we can refresh our memory with the OBG project.
That's right. The OBG project kind of has their great, great summaries and these bullet point formats online. They've got resident exclusive resources, the core curriculum, and they've got a new project in the primary care med project. You can check that out as well, which lets you get up to date with all those primary care guidelines that we got to keep up with too.
And even better, if you're a resident, remember that you can get OBG First absolutely free. So if you want to figure out how to do that, go ahead and go onto our website, click on the sidebar, and link to the OBG project.
All right, guys, welcome back. This is Nick.
This is Faye.
And this is
Kriyogs over coffee.
All right, so we're back now with part two of our series of some of the basics of genetics, but we left you last time with it getting a little more complex, and it sounds like today, Faye, we're going to get even more complex.
Yes. So today, our learning objectives, we are going to do that number three, begin to learn the complexities of epigenetics. Before we kind of get into that, I know also that people get confused because they say, you know, there are certain genetic disorders that seem to produce variation in phenotype, even though the genotype of those that are affected are the same. So the example that people will give is like people who have the BRCA1 mutations, they're known to have an increased risk of breast and ovarian cancer, but not everyone with a BRCA1 mutation will develop these cancers. So what is that called, and how do we address this in terms of genetic terms?
Yeah, so let's start off with kind of two terms that geneticists think about or characterize with these genes, penetrance and expressivity. So penetrance, to start, is the proportion of people with a particular genetic variant or gene mutation who ultimately exhibit signs and symptoms of a genetic disorder. Penetrance is all or nothing. So if someone has a specific genotype, they either have that phenotype or they don't have that phenotype. So again, to go back to your BRCA1 example, Faye, they either develop breast cancer or they don't develop breast cancer, and that is the penetrance of the gene in that individual. If some people do not develop features of the disorder, then the condition is said to have reduced or incomplete penetrance. So comparatively speaking, you know, we mentioned this BRCA1 kind of incomplete penetrance, but neurofibromatosis type 1 and 2 are conditions that have complete penetrance by contrast, meaning that everyone who carries neurofibromatosis 1 or neurofibromatosis 2 gene will show some phenotypic signs of neurofibromatosis disease. In contrast to penetrance, expressivity is the range of signs and symptoms that can occur in different people with the same genetic condition. So as an example of expressivity, in those who have Marfan syndrome with the FBN1 variant, each individual may have different features of Marfan syndrome. Some people may have very long limbs while others don't. Some have lens subluxation of the eye. Some may not. Again, the expressivity basically describes the variation in phenotype that can occur, whereas penetrance is whether a phenotype actually shows up or not as a result of that gene. Okay, Faye, let's talk next about anticipation as a confusing genetic term.
Yes. So anticipation in genetics is when signs and symptoms of certain genetic conditions tend to become more severe and or appear at earlier ages as the disorder is passed from one generation to the next. And this is caused by disorders that are due to trinucleotide repeat expansion. So basically a big way of saying three nucleotides that repeat in the DNA. So DNA segments with abnormally large number of these three nucleotide repeats are unstable, and this can lead to errors during replication and mitosis. So these trinucleotide repeats can expand when passed from parent to child. That's the anticipation. And this can reach a point where the gene will no longer function or no longer function as well, which can then lead to features of the disease. And the example here that I think we classically get is Fragile X, which is caused by CGG repeats in the FMR1 gene. Now, most people who are not affected will have less than 45 repeats of CGG. However, in those with premutation, they will have 55 to about 200 repeats. And the premutation means that the offsprings can actually have expansion of the CGG repeats, which can then lead their offspring to be affected individuals who have more than 200 repeats of the CGG area. All right, so we've kind of talked now about some of these complexities of inheritance, but we're still really talking about, you know, what is specifically written in the DNA, that coding. But the other thing that can lead to certain genetic disorders, Nick, is epigenetics. So talk to us about what that means.
Yeah, so epigenetics are factors, again, outside of that usual coding of DNA, and leads to certain genes being turned on or turned off, the light switch of the gene, if you will. Now, this can be thought of adding tags like a methyl group known as methylation that can change if gene transcription occurs or doesn't occur in some cases. So again, like that light switch is with that methyl group. This is a huge topic. I am not a geneticist, for full disclosure, and so we will not go into the weeds on epigenetics, and this is a huge, ever-changing, expansive field. But we do want to mention two topics that the CREOGS are likely to cover because they are becoming more relevant clinically. So the first, Faye, is X inactivation.
Yes. So the X chromosome, as we all know, contains important genes that are needed for normal growth and development. But in those that have two X chromosomes, they will have two copies of all of these genes in their cell, while those with one X chromosome will only have one copy of these genes. And really, only one copy of most genes on the X chromosome are needed. And so in those with two copies of the X chromosome, most genes on one of the X chromosomes is actually inactivated. And this process is called lionization, named after the geneticist Mary Lyon. This inactivated X chromosome will appear tightly wound on a microscope and is called a bar body. However, some genes located on the P arm of the X and Y chromosomes are actually called pseudo-autosomal genes, meaning that there are genes in these areas of the X and Y chromosomes that pair up during production of sperm in men. We won't go into this any further, but just know that it does exist and that, you know, sometimes not all portions of the X chromosome is completely inactivated. To get back into lionization, the process in which one of the X chromosomes is switched off in a cell is random most of the time. So the example here is like a calico cat. So the gene for the black fur and the gene for orange fur are on separate X chromosomes. And these are inactivated randomly in the cells of the cat, leading to a cat that has both black and orange fur, because in some cells the gene for black fur is turned off, and in some cells the gene for orange fur is turned off. So the question then is, you know, Faye, why most of the time is it random? So those with two X chromosomes who are carriers of a gene variant on one of the X chromosomes actually tend to not show any signs or symptoms of the genetic disorder that may come with it, or they may only show very mild symptoms or signs. And there is some thought that X inactivation may actually be skewed towards switching off the gene variant or the gene mutation on the X chromosome that has it. All right, so that's all I have to say right now about X inactivation. There's clearly a lot more to be said, but again, we are not geneticists. Let's talk about the next thing, which is genetic imprinting.
Yeah, so as you guys remember from the last episodes, we get a pair of chromosomes, but one copy comes from your mother and one copy comes from your father. Generally, both the maternal copy and the paternal copy of the gene are used, so both gene copies, so to speak, are switched on by default. But for some genes, the activity of that gene depends on whether the copy was passed down from the mother or the father. So, for instance, in some cases, a certain genetic allele inherited from the mother is always switched off, or vice versa. And this process, or kind of this default switch off, is known as imprinting. Imprinting is accomplished by the tagging process I briefly described earlier. Again, that methylation. So a paternal copy of a gene, if that's the one to be expressed, the maternal copy gets methylated or tagged to be switched off. This is important because even if somebody inherits a quote-unquote working copy of a gene, they might still exhibit certain genetic conditions if the working copy from the parent is always switched off and the non-working copy turns out to be the one that's always switched on. So again, this is accomplished via imprinting and is another concept to be aware of. Faye, something that's kind of related, I guess, but in a different kind of way, is something I don't think about too often, but shows up on the CREOGS and is a very complicated word, uniparental disomy. What is it?
Yes. Yeah. So uniparental disomy, if we just break down the two words, is basically when a person inherits both copies of a chromosome, so chromosome 14, 15, for example, from one parent only. So instead of having one maternal copy and one paternal copy, they will have both maternal copies or they will have both paternal copies. And this occurs usually from something called meiotic non-disjunction followed by trisomy rescue, which is a lot of big words that I feel like I only learned in my MFM fellowship. So let's break that down a little bit. So non-disjunction, remember, think back all the way to medical school when you had meiosis and mitosis and you had, you know, those chromosomes that lined up and then they kind of went to their separate cells. That's kind of what's happening here. So non-disjunction is when there is a failure of one or more pairs of homologous chromosomes or sister chromatids to separate normally during nuclear division. And that leads to daughter cells that have an abnormal number of chromosomes. So one daughter cell that is going to have one too many and one daughter cell that is going to have one too few. So as you can imagine, if someone has meiotic non-disjunction, one of those daughter cells is going to have three copies of a chromosome potentially when it comes to when that egg meets the sperm. Trisomy rescue is when a fertilized ovum that contains those three copies of a chromosome loses one of these chromosomes to form a diploid chromosome complement. So somehow, one of the chromosomes actually gets lost. It's through a process called anaphase lag that we're not going to get into today. But it ultimately results in a cell that has a normal amount of chromosomes. However, when that happens, the one that gets lost may be the one that comes from potentially the paternal side or the maternal side that can result in two chromosomes coming from the same parent. And the biggest example of when uniparental disomy leads to a disorder that comes up on CREOGS is Prader-Willi syndrome and Angelman syndrome. So both are due to a non-functioning or absent gene in the same region of chromosome 15q11-13. However, Prader-Willi syndrome is due to the absence of a paternal contribution to the area. So this will happen when both chromosome 15s come from mom. And then Angelman syndrome is due to the absence of a maternal contribution to the same region, so both chromosome 15s coming from dad. All right, Nick, I think we definitely got into the weeds a little bit on this episode, but I do think that these are important topics that our listeners should know about for their CREOG. So let's go ahead and quickly summarize.
Absolutely. So we started off this episode talking about penetrance and expressivity. Again, penetrance is the proportion of people with a particular genetic variant or gene mutation who exhibit signs and symptoms of a genetic disorder. So for instance, a BRCA1 mutation sometimes results in breast cancer, but sometimes doesn't result in breast cancer. This is known as incomplete penetrance. Compare that to neurofibromatosis, where if you are a carrier of neurofibromatosis, you will show a phenotypic sign of that disease, and that is complete penetrance by contrast. Expressivity is the range of signs and symptoms that can occur in different people with the same genetic condition. So basically, they have the same genetic condition, but they have what appears to be a slight variation of the phenotype. So for example, in patients with Marfan syndrome with the FBN1 variant, some may have very long limbs, others don't. Some may have the lens subluxation, some may not, and some have varying degrees of disease in between. Again, that range of phenotypes is known as the expressivity of the disorder.
We then talked about anticipation, which is when signs and symptoms of a certain genetic condition tends to become more severe or appear at earlier ages. And this is caused by trinucleotide repeat expansions, which can lead to increasing numbers of these trinucleotide repeats as these genes get passed on. The example here is Fragile X, caused by the CGG repeats, where some people can have a premutation between 55 to 200 repeats of the CGG, and affected individuals will have more than 200 repeats.
We then moved into the big topic of epigenetics. Again, those factors outside the usual coding of DNA that leads to certain genes being turned on or off, that light switch, frequently through a process known as methylation, where a tag gets added to the DNA that changes whether gene transcription occurs. One such example of epigenetics is the process of X chromosome inactivation. So again, some folks have two copies of the X chromosome, other folks have only one copy, and only one copy of most genes on the X chromosome are needed. So in those who have two copies, most genes on one of those X chromosomes gets inactivated through a process called lionization, and that inactivated X chromosome appears tightly wound in the cell and is called a Barr body. The process in which one of those X chromosomes gets switched off is random most of the time. So again, the example here is that calico cat. The black fur and the orange fur are on separate X chromosomes, inactivated randomly in each cell, so you get the cat that is both black and orange. And most of the time, again, you get this random inactivation. But there's some thought that X inactivation may be skewed to switching off gene variants on the X chromosome that are associated with disease. So again, patients who are carriers of a gene variant on X chromosome that have two X chromosomes tend to not show any signs or symptoms of that disorder because that X chromosome that's affected tends to be inactivated.
The last thing we talked about was genetic imprinting, which is where there are certain genes that are automatically switched on or switched off depending on which copy we get, the maternal or the paternal copy. So some genes, the activity depends on whether the copy was passed down from the mother or father, known as imprinting, and this is done via the tagging process of methylization. This is important because even if someone inherits a quote-unquote working copy of a gene, they may still exhibit a certain genetic condition if that copy is from the parent where the allele is always switched off. Something that can occur because of genetic imprinting and other disorders of inheritance is something called uniparental disomy, which is when someone inherits both copies of a chromosome from one parent only. And the examples that you may see on CREOGS of uniparental disomy leading to disorder is Prader-Willi syndrome and Angelman syndrome, which are both due to non-functioning or absent genes in the same region of chromosome 15, Q11 to 13, but it is due to either the absence of a paternal contribution or the absence of a maternal contribution. All right, Nick, that brings us to the end of this episode. So once again, this is Faye.
This is Nick.
And this has been CREOGS Over Coffee.
So guys, if you enjoyed the podcast, head over to iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, whatever your podcatcher is, give us a 5-star rating and review.
You can find us on social media on X at CREOGS Over Coffee, on Facebook and Instagram at CREOGS Over Coffee. And if you want to donate to the show, go ahead and go over to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/CREOGSOverCoffee.
You can find show notes for this episode and all of our previous episodes on our website, CREOGSOverCoffee.com.
And if you want to reach out to us, have a question about the show, have ideas for an episode or a correction for us, go ahead and email us, CREOGSOverCoffee@gmail.com.